Good morning, everyone. It is 9:00 a.m. on Tuesday, August 16th, 2022. Time to convene the regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Toni Olson, Board President. To my right is Rebecca Wolf, Vice President. To my left is Sid Logan, Board Secretary. To my right at the table is John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Anne Spangler, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, I don't know where you are, I thought you were on.
No.
Allison Morrison, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board by the door, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please remember to mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the board and the CEO, General Manager, to study and discuss issues among ourselves that may in the future come before the board. I'll turn it over to you, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you, Commissioner Olson. And up first, as usual, is our fabulous Julie Cunningham with our media update. Morning, Julie.
Good morning. I'm actually myself and Laura Zorick today for you. I'm wearing two hats today. We have so many people, so many things going on. She was too busy to be here this afternoon. And we have a lot of, or this morning, we have a lot of media to report on. So I'm doing both for you this morning, and there's lots of both. We had so much good coverage on the EV fast charger installation. I mean, it was absolutely everywhere. It was in the industry news, different publications, it was in our local publications. The Everett Herald carried it, my Everett News, and then the PDA. Lots of really good coverage on that. We had, we also let our, we're trying to keep our customers up to date on Connect Up, how it's going. So we did send a press release about some of the delays and the opt-out, and that got covered by my Everett News and my Edmonds News. The Herald's climate change reporter did a story about all electrification push, and that was in the Everett Herald, climate change prompts a push away from natural gas, talking about, we were part of that story. Green energy and storage were noted in editorial, How Green Is Your Electricity, in the Seattle Times. Summer projects, we're always trying to let our customers know what summer projects we have going on, and that we had some in the Everett Post, in the Everett Herald. Our Qualco generator was covered in the Everett Herald. Our partnership with City of Mukilteo on utility assistance was covered in the Mukilteo Beacon and the Linwood Times. Stories on a run for warmth and Zip and Zap have been covered in my Everett News, my Edmonds News, NWPPA, and our utility line workers competing at the Lineman Rodeo, which they did very well at, was in the Northwest Labor Press. Also, the microgrid was in a story in the North County Outlook. So lots and lots of good press that we've been having, including, I always like to leave the best for last, we are the lead story with Kelly Strand in the Northwest Public Power Association Bulletin. She's cover story. So we have the cover story. That's all on our Flex Energy program. So watch for that. I didn't have an actual copy bring today, but, so I don't know the page or anything, but it's a big story. So pretty exciting. In other things, I don't know if you noticed our billboard out here, which we always have in the month of August, is out at the corner. First time ever in the many, many years we've had this, it got tagged. It actually got tagged. It's got a big red spray paint on it. And so they're going to replace it for us free. This is the new world we're in. I think they actually lowered the billboard when they put in the bridge, and maybe that made access to it easier, but something that hasn't happened before. So they are going to replace it for us and keep it up.
Is that another place we need to put a camera?
Oh my gosh, they have really, I'm sure they're feeling that way. Also, we have current coming up. This is the cover, Charging into Fall is going to be our theme for it. That will be coming out at the end of next month, but I have this little preview to be able to show you. I don't know if I mentioned, but we have a new highlights that we're doing once a month for our field workers, especially it's geared toward them. What I really like, this is the edition for August. What I really like about this is that it focuses on things we think they're most interested in, stories from there. But I love that we get to run photos that they tend to send in from the field. I think they're some of our best and some of our award-winning ones that we get recognition for often in the industry especially. So kind of a cool thing I just wanted to share on the, now flipping over to what's going on in our community engagement, the list is equally long. We have been in 6 different parades recently with our vintage truck, many employees helping us with all of these. We had a wonderful Team PUD Family Day. We thought there was about 350, but actually, John, we gave out 400 name tags. So just under 400 name tags. So we had a good turnout for our Family Day, which was so much fun. Walter E. Hall, the community solar array, I think this is great outreach with our multi-bilingual customers. We had bilingual CSRs join us for National Night Out and the Connect Casino Road Carnival, and 70% of our visitors were Spanish-speaking. So that's really wonderful that we have. We had flyers out in English and Spanish at that. And additionally, there were 5 different languages that we're trying to assist with, but we're not as strong on. And of course, the Evergreen State Fair is coming up. I brought that to show you because I think it's fun just to sneak peek at it to show the theme. We have this large pig, which is part of the, and the customers will be able to see themselves reflected in the sunglasses here. So I think it's going to be something that will be a smile getter for all of those working at the fair this year. There's lots of other things this month happening at the fair. Or happening this month, the National Night Out. We were at 6 different places for National Night Out on August 2nd. We had the Connect Casino Road Carnival on August 6th. We had a great PUD Power Talk last Thursday, I think it was, on EVs, and very good attendance on it. Lots of questions about them, so that was very positive. And then we have safety days happening for the next 2 days here at the district. And we have a bird event happening, Swift's Night Out, August 20th. Just want to mention all the different employees that are involved in a lot of a variety of what we're doing around the district. So, I mean, there's no reason to be bored. There's places you can go out and find us.
I had an acquaintance, let's see, last Thursday, ask me if the thing that cooks weenies.
Oh yeah, the ARC trailer.
Is that going to be there?
The ARC trailer was. It will be at Safety Days, but it was also at. It was at the City of Briar for the National Night Out, and it will be at the State Fair too. So
oh, good.
At the Evergreen State Fair. So it's.
Thought that was interesting. That was one of the first things.
I think I'm even leaving it out at some places. It's been as well. We've been a lot of places in the last 3 months. This is the busy time. It really goes through September, building up to a run in October, and then maybe we can take a breath after that a little bit. But and it's taking people from around the district, and it's really very positive. Laura's had a lot of good response to help, so
great.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're seeing your signs on the buses.
Yes, so good. That's one of my favorites, a favorite way for us to.
My partner says, hey, there's your sign.
Especially, I love it, especially Commissioner, on the electric buses.
Oh yeah, sure.
That's our best. Thank you.
Has Zip and Zap been?
Oh, I love to share about Zip and Zap. They've been very popular with our employees who have been taking Zip. Well, we have small ones and we have a big stuff. These are stuffed right now.
Okay.
Out to the different events that they're doing. I don't even know where they are. They're on the road right now somewhere because people keep borrowing them to take along. So, and as an update on that, right now we are having some proposals from artists on costuming and the art for Zip and Zap. So we're waiting for those proposals to come in as our next.
So,
and then our costumes will happen.
You're going to have to wear something.
Yes.
It's really hot.
No, we're only getting ones that have, they now have air conditioning built
okay,
into them.
Yeah.
I know it's come a long ways, Commissioner, since we used to have to wear Louie the Lightning Bug and just about die inside.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that's going to be a commissioner requirement.
Yeah.
Make sure you get a tall one for the
CEO. Yeah, we've had that conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Julie. So when Julie said that our sign got tagged, I thought that was a good thing. I thought I was finally hip and the lingo. I thought that was a social media tag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff going on. And one additional comment. Julie mentioned that we've had a number of employees drive the vintage truck in the local parades, and it is fun to listen to the enthusiasm from folks that get the opportunity to do that in their own communities. I had a conversation with Dave Winberg, an ECC operator, in the Stanwood parade, and he was just smiling ear to ear, very proud of that truck, but most importantly, very proud of the PUD and what we're doing in the communities. And that's just a small sample, but it's really cool to see the heavy lift that Julie and Laura and team were doing, but also the engagement with employees. It's pretty cool.
And the truck, in parades, yeah. The kids love it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So do the adults.
I get more joy out of the children.
All right, next up on the agenda is the legislative report, and Kim, fabulous Kim Johnston, I believe is here. I did see her. If you have any questions. Back from a vacation.
I believe the district, the PUD Daily, what do we call the one that comes out every day, District News, they had an article reference, but I wasn't able to access it yet, but I'll figure out how to do it. But it's about all the benefits from the new federal legislation.
Yeah.
That we're going to, I mean, for electric vehicles and all sorts of things electric.
Yeah. Lots of opportunity to have the inflation reduction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Commissioner, I had kind of, I've only done it, I mean, that's a big book in terms of the legislation to wade through. But I saw where there was some mention of investment in transmission, interstate transmission. And when I am just, this is over the top, great, but are they remembering, or is that someplace buried in this, the grid that can manage it, or the sophistication of the systems that can accommodate? You know, you've got the carrots on the front end, buying electric cars.
Yeah.
They're going to be all over the place, probably. And I always think about, let's make sure that we're ready.
Okay, Kim has all that information.
Kim's been on vacation, so he doesn't have all of the information. But what I can say is there is transmission built into both the Inflation Reduction Act and the larger infrastructure bill that passed. And we are looking and digging into that, not just ourselves, but APPA, NWPPA, PPC. We're all kind of navigating this together. It's a meaningful moment in time.
Really?
The energy perspective and the influx of dollars that we're seeing in some of these programs.
So people keep asking me about that legislation, which I have not digested, about the IRA. The IRA. I think of Ireland and the revolution. Anyway, as soon as we can get something that I can share with constituents, that would be really handy. But I know it's a lot to go through.
Yeah, we were digging through.
So in other words, how
this is just
our
a small portion of my cheat sheets on the bill right now.
What they want to know is, how is RPUD going to benefit
take
from
advantage.
All that?
Yep, we're looking at that.
Benefit
I just
or
had
not,
a
but,
very quick initial conversation with Jim Herling today on some of the direct pay provisions in there and how that might impact us. So lots more to come. Exciting stuff.
And does this kind of federal legislation have to go through the rulemaking process?
Parts of it?
Okay.
Likely will. There's a, much like the infrastructure bill, there's just a lot to, there are a lot of questions as to what it all means. So right now we're just waiting for the president to sign that thing today.
Oh, today?
I believe it's today.
Didn't he sign that just yesterday? Or
it could have been yesterday, like I said, coming off a vacation, guys. I'm really sorry.
I think he did sign it, but we'll check.
Yeah, I can send an email. Just verify. Thanks.
Commissioner Lovett. No, I have no other questions. I was just going to comment on that bill.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Kim. So first up on our presentations is our reliability for 2021 report, and David Puffich and Zach Scott will be presenting. And I will tell you, as a preview, they sent the presentation and the report to us, to the ELT, a week or so ago. And we've had a lot of good discussion, these two have, and the team have really done just a lot of good work, not just tracking, but with some of the reliability improvement initiatives.
Yeah.
And again, it's just really encouraging to see the focus on how we continue to improve the reliability of our system.
That was a very, this is high level presentation. I was very.
Good morning, David.
Morning. Hi. Sound good?
Very close.
So hello, everyone. Good morning. I'm Dave Popich, and with me is Zach Scott, and we'll be presenting our 2021 reliability data. Reliability analysis and improvements have been focused all within four of our district's strategic priorities: operations, customer experience, safety and team, and cost management. In terms of operations, our efforts in equipment aimed at improving reliability work better when everyone's on the same page and everyone knows how everything's supposed to work. System Protection has provided training to system operators and field personnel to ensure that our devices in the field are working correctly and switching is done when appropriate to restore customers as fast as possible. Regarding customer experience, we continue to identify outages that affect the most amount of customers and develop strategies to try to reduce the impact of outages we have. In matter of safety and team, we attempt to inspect all of our protective equipment and replace anything that is not working as well as it should. We also work to ensure our documentation and instructions on our field equipment is up to date and clear for those field personnel working on them. Please feel free to ask questions at any time.
I think it might be good, instead of waiting until the very end. I do have a question. When you say switching when available, what do you mean when available?
So first you must have a place to open and close a switch to have the ability to restore customers through switching. And then not every possible configuration should be used in terms of we could possibly overload a circuit that's using to pick up another to restore customers. And then the other scenario would be some configurations might make a circuit much longer. We don't want to make circuits too long because then we can't clear faults. So when possible, we will do switching to restore customers, but
okay.
We don't want to.
Thank you. And I did have one other question under safety and team. I think we're already doing that. So is that just not a continuation of applying knowledge to implement safe and productive work practices? I mean, we do that.
Yes, we do. And I think this bullet is referring to as we get new technology and new functionalities of our devices that we have not seen before. An example could be fire settings. For our substation breakers, we must continue to implement and implement safe and productive work practices and also adjust previous ones if needed.
Okay, good, thanks.
I think one way to look at that is both from a safety and an operational perspective, that's part of our continuous improvement process,
mm-hmm.
Right? We're never there. It's always from a safety perspective, what's the next best work practice, whether it's how do we switch and isolate in the field, make sure it's safe to work on, safe for our customers, and the same thing with reliability. How do we continue to improve, evaluate, and apply the knowledge and experience to make us better?
Got it. Thank you.
Finally, with cost management, we spend a lot of time analyzing where improvements can be made for the largest impact to our reliability and how to implement projects that will provide more operational flexibility, possibly allowing more restoration opportunities. A few common reliability index definitions that are going to be used throughout the presentation is SAIDI, which is the total duration of interruption for the average customer. This is measured in minutes. KD, the average time required to restore service to a customer, which is also in minutes. SAIFI, how often the average customer experiences a sustained outage, and a major event day where SAIDI in a 24-hour period exceeds a threshold. This threshold is calculated annually, and it's based on the previous 5 years, 5-year data.
This is just a question. Did we make up MED? That is really, that, I hadn't seen that before.
It's actually part of the IEEE.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Please go on. I was just curious.
Taking a look at our 2021 reliability numbers compared to 2020 and five-year average, we exclude planned outages and major event days to focus on typical day-to-day operations. In 2021, we had an increase in SAIDI, while KDI remained relatively the same. This means we had more outages in 2021, but we were able to restore customers in relatively the same amount of time. In 2021, the average customer experienced 137.9 minutes of interruption, and it took on average 106.7 minutes to restore power to that customer. When looking at SAIFI, the average customer experienced 1.29 outages in 2021, which was an increase in the number of outages from our five-year average in 2020. We've recently developed a heat map for a better visual of what areas of the district need to be focused on. The following map breaks down our 2021 reliability numbers by circuits and their respective SAIDI. Rural areas show much less reliability, which also relates to areas where we have substations that are much more spread out and where circuits are also much more spread out, resulting in less opportunity for field ties and to do switching. Data like this makes it easier for us to justify projects in areas of the county where we need reliability improvements.
Back to that map. This is a fascinating map. Are the red dots substations?
They are.
It's interesting. There's some areas that I would think would be red and others that are like warm beaches yellow, which is sort of, just sort of interesting to see. It mostly makes sense. It's mostly the trees that are.
And this is, I would say this is based on the 2021 numbers. I think if you looked at a probably five-year average of this, I bet Warm Beach would be red as well.
Okay.
But yeah, this is a fascinating map to see, like, Grant Falls up there. There was not a substation within a very long radius. So it's, having data like this is very helpful.
Yeah. It's also interesting to look at the delay of preservation. It's large areas there between substations.
One quick comment, if you could go back a slide. So you see the increase in SAIFI and SAIDI over the last couple of years. And even though the MED is to try to remove the anomalies from storms, right? We still had a high number of storms, mm-hmm. and that's embedded in those numbers because that's only a 24-hour period that gets isolated out of the numbers. You have storms that don't meet that level to get pulled out of the numbers, and you also have, if we have a significant storm, that first 24 hours may get excluded, but the following days, day two, day three, day four, to restore those customers are not. And that's some of the longest KDs and or SAIDI, the minutes, when you get into second, third, fourth day of a storm. So even though the MED is supposed to exclude storms, it doesn't exclude all storms. And we've had, you know, an unusually high number of storms, especially in 2021. Does that make sense, David? Is that
correct? Yeah. And I will get into major event days here coming up.
I think when we have our next contest, we should include SAIDI and KDI. Up to Stephen's app.
Clever. So looking at this map again, is there a way to put like with like as far as this and the effect on storms or on outages? I mean, treat areas, non-treat areas. I mean, how do you know where you're doing well and where you're not? Because some areas are going to be intrinsically green and some are more likely to be red.
Yeah, and then looking at this map, these areas that are red, Woods Creek, Sultan, Gold Bar, Grant Falls, going up to Arlington and Kamado, this is our areas where circuits are very long and they're very treed.
Yeah, and I guess you are going to attack Lazarus in the later part of the road.
Yeah. Utilities report their numbers annually to organizations like IEEE, Energy Information Administration, and the Utilities Transportation Commission. The data for 2021 is not publicly available yet, so I've included 2018 through 2020 and an average of the 3 years. In the table, we've included Avista Corporation, Puget Sound Energy, and Jefferson County. Avista performed slightly better than us in 2020, while we outperformed Puget Sound Energy and Jefferson County. When looking at the 3-year average, we performed exceptionally well. What stands out to me is that we continue to keep the average time to restore power to our customers very consistent, even on years where SAIDI is either much lower or higher. When including major event days, and that's the first 3 columns there in the table, you can see that on average, our SAIDI almost doubles, but this can be a lot worse in certain years.
Just a quick comment too, and not to make an excuse, because I absolutely want us to be the best on the list, but we do have, or I'll say Avista has a pretty significant advantage. They do not have the number or the size of trees that we do on their service territory. I mean,
really?
Yeah, the eastern side of the state just doesn't have the tree density and the size of trees.
Yeah, they go into other states though, don't they?
Yeah, but this
There's
one.
A path.
I don't know if this is all of Avista or just Avista. Probably
oh,
all of Avista's TI.
Yeah, that is actually specifically Washington's.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so, and that's a huge advantage, if you will, to not have the, and maybe we'll get more into the significance of tree outages on our system, but that's, to me, that's the big factor, big difference between our performance and theirs. So it is more comparable with PSC.
So.
Can we go back? I just have, you may have said it, but why Jefferson?
Why did they specifically choose Jefferson County?
Yeah.
You know, is one of the ones that was available on the Energy Information Administration public website.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
For example, Seattle City Light was actually not on there, but we would have used that
one. Well, that was my other question for Seattle City Light. All right, thank you.
For sure.
When including major event days and planned outages, our 2021 system SAIDI was 643 minutes. For a day to be considered a major event day in 2021, that threshold was 12.19 minutes. So in 2021, we had 6 days that were above that threshold. But as John mentioned, we had 6 days that were just below that threshold, but above 5 minutes. So that was included in those, what we call blue sky days. So with a lower threshold, they possibly might have been excluded. January 13th, a single major event day accounted for 283.7 minutes of that total. Just to reward that, the average customer experienced more than 4 hours of interruption on just January 13th. That single day accounted for more minutes than every single other non-major event day combined, and is also higher than the entire year of 2020, even when including major event days from 2020. This day was exceptionally bad due to transmission outages that took out multiple substations at once. 2020, we had one less major event day, but as you can see, they're much less impactful than the ones in 2021. 2020, we took a deeper look at which substations are contributing the most to our system SAIDI. What stood out to us was that we had 4 substations that were 31% of our system SAIDI. Looking at 2021, it was a relief to see that substations were more even and there were no outliers, with the top 4 being only 22%, which is more of what we would expect when you look at those 4 circuits, all equally very long, and 2 of those are actually double bank substations. So that was as expected. When looking at the cause of outages and the SAIDI contributed by it, tree-related outages continue to dominate year after year. Trees increased by 3% in 2021, and as did equipment failures. Looking further into the 2 biggest causes, we'll start with trees. Tree trimming does not completely remove the possibility of a limb causing an outage, but it does reduce it. On this slide, I wanted to show a few examples of what tree trimming looks like when it's done per district standard. We trim our limbs 15 feet above our distribution lines, while with transmission, we remove all limbs above the transmission line. So typically when a transmission line involves an outage, it's because an entire tree has fallen into the line, and very rarely is because of a limb. For distribution lines, we also remove any trees that are greater than 25 feet and within 4 feet horizontally. While with transmission, we do that for 8 feet horizontally. But from these photos, you can see that those branches that are more than 15 feet above can still come down on the line, and when they do, it's typically with more force, which can result into breaking through the line and a much bigger outage. Currently, tree trimming is in the process of getting demonstrations from several satellite imagery companies to see if it's something the district may want to use, and hopefully it would result into a more proactive approach to cycle trimming instead of reactive.
So those trees in those first two pictures are farther than 4 feet away? It's deceiving, isn't it?
It is deceiving.
It looks like it's right next to a line, yeah.
Exactly, it is deceiving. They're, yeah.
Interesting.
And the other factor too is with trees is storms, right? And or just wind, and then ground saturation. So, and those will show up again, certainly during storms and the major events, but even when we have a storm or a wind event that doesn't turn into a major event, you know, we can have trees blown over or entire limbs come down. And those are long minute restorations. It's not just, you know, cutting a line off or cutting a limb off a line and plugging the fuse back in. It's usually sometimes breaking a pole or the line's completely down, all tangled up in the tree. So those are extensive minute outages.
And I'll just mention, these poles are not short, they're 55 feet. So if you look at the tree even in the middle, it looks like it's about double the size of the pole. So we're up to 100 feet there with all those limbs coming down. Overall, we had more equipment failures in 2021 compared to the 5-year average. Of the 582 total, 7% of them were actually during the heat wave of June 26th to 29th. Going forward, this is something that we plan to track better so we can compare year after year what our peak heat waves are doing to our equipment and seeing what we can possibly do to prevent it.
So were those numbers up because they're overloaded, circuits were overloaded?
No.
With the line fuse cut out?
No, so overall, we just had more equipment failures in 2021. I make the point of that 7% of them, which fairly high, I guess, was during June 26th through 29th. But not really have anything to compare that to in the previous years of heat waves that were, I mean, last year's was a bit abnormal to us around here. So it's something we plan to track in the future and see if that is related. But there wasn't much data to compare to.
Is any of this related to the fact that we haven't had all the supplies that we needed for replacements and updating because of the supply chain delays or any of that?
That would maybe have to be a question for standards. I don't think I.
Okay.
I would say no.
Okay.
Although we've had transformer concerns, supply chain transformer concerns, it's been mostly for new construction.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had any issues and didn't have any issues. I think part of what David is referring to, the heat bubble or heat wave last summer, is we had an unusually high number of transformer failures during that period of time, but we didn't have any issue with having transformers in replacement.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You said there's not a lot of data to compare to. I can't believe that there aren't some utilities, particularly in California, that they would track this for comparison.
They do. In fact, a lot of companies have what's called a transformer load management program, and they track the loadings on transformers and in particular parts of the country where, and we'll experience it here with people starting to add air conditioning. Traditionally, homes were built without air conditioning. Now people are adding air conditioning. And when they're adding it on an existing home, that will, you know, start, especially in the neighborhood that's fed off of same transformer, have to upgrade the transformer, have to upgrade the service or the lines. So we'll start to see some of that. And I think that's what David's referring to. We're going to, we'll have a better handle on tracking that and using that data to make sure we evaluate, not just for future builds and development, but also how do we proactively plan for those and or replace transformers and so on and so forth.
It's interesting, it's so few pull failures. We don't, we have very few pull failures.
Yes, that's a good thing. And I would attribute that in large part to our pole inspection and maintenance program.
Yeah, you can see it even on this slide here, impressive how many poles we replaced annually. 2021, we completed 94 inertia switch replacements. We were able to complete 61 pad-mounted switch inspections, which I'll mention that when a pad-mounted switch fails, it's usually results in a very large outage. So this is a program that we've recently started in the last year, and hoping to see a lot of improvement from just doing the pad-mounted switch inspections. We continue our field device inspections annually, which is our chance to identify failing or aging protective equipment that needs replacement. We replaced 528 poles in 2021. We were able to install 13 reclosers, 5 capacitor banks, 3 regular and 3 regular banks. We completed the Woods Creek to Lake Chaplain tie, which gives flexibility to 2 circuits that traditionally have had poor reliability, and also gives us flexibility to offload a heavily loaded Woods Creek circuit. And we also completed 9 system reliability projects, which brings our substations up to standard, addresses any aging equipment, and updates the protection settings.
I have a question before you leave. Excuse me. Sorry. Before you leave this slide, the inertia switches, which were faulty, we replaced with a better.
Yes.
And those are doing well.
Those are doing great. Gain operating efficiencies.
How does the bad order pole replacement compare to previous years?
Yeah, I would have to pull up last year's numbers. I believe that last year we actually took a year off where we were replacing them and we were inspecting them. I think this year we might have focused on replacing them. When possible, manual switching is done by field personnel at system operators direction. In 2021, there were 411 outages that benefited from field switching. These 411 outages affected 230,000 customers, and we were able to reduce from a potential of 56 million minutes down to 30 million minutes. Through switching, we were able to reduce our total outage minutes by 35% and save 68 minutes of saving.
What is VMI?
Customer minutes interrupted.
Okay.
In 2021, there were 170 outages that benefited from reclosers compared to 121 in 2020. These 170 outages could have affected 216,000 customers, but only affected 85,000, reducing our potential minutes from 87 million down to 32 million minutes, which with a total of 146 minutes of safety saved. So as you can see, field switching and reclosers are one of our most effective ways to improve reliability. So we continue to install reclosers annually and develop projects to allow for more switching, for field switching capabilities. Single phase reclosers are a cost effective alternative to our current 3-phase reclosers. They're much smaller, they're easier to operate, install, and program. We're continuing to deploy these as we've seen a positive impact with our existing pilots. In 2021, we were able to install 6 trip savers as a pilot, and then the Hubble reclosers were installed actually in 2020. So we've been tracking those. So in 2021, the Hubble's operated 5 times, reducing outage count from 462 customers to 159 each time. Those are located up in North Mound, which is traditionally a less reliable circuit. The Trip Savers, which are located in Gold Bar, operated 4 times since being installed in 2021. And they were able to reduce outage count from 650 customers to 300 for each set. We continue to use our reliability improvement list to try to focus on circuits that are repeatedly performing worse than others. The scores given to each circuit compare SAIDI normalized by circuit length and safety. This ensures that not the same long circuits are on the list each year. An example of how we use this list in the recent year is North Mountain was on the list in both 2020 and 2021. We were able to put in 4 projects this year to allow for more flexibility for field switching, allow better fault clearing, circuit sectionalizing to reduce the impact of outages, and a switched capacitor bank to mitigate voltage issues. We use this list strategically. A circuit on the list for 1 year or one single rare outage may not warrant a reliability project. At the same time, a circuit not on the list can also warrant a project. Example of this would be in 2021, we had installed a recloser for a sold circuit that serves both the city and some rural areas of Seoul. So with the recloser that was put across the bridge, if you're aware of where that is, that's where 95% of the outages were coming from. So now with that recloser, we're able to isolate those outages and keep all the commercial, residential, and even schools in service at Seoul.
It's a big safety issue.
Say it over time.
We've got some big safeties on this list for this year.
Yeah.
Like Portage 19.
Yeah, and that's
Granite 10. Really?
Yeah, compared to the other 2 years, those two, yeah.
But again, I go back to storm activity,
yep,
and the result or the residual after those med days.
Yeah.
So now Zach will cover reliability analysis we performed during 2021.
Thank you, David. Transmission auto sectionalizing continues to be our most successful reliability improvement program, saving potentially tens of thousands of customers from a sustained outage during a transmission event. Automatically isolating damage to affected line segments while restoring customers in unaffected areas can easily save millions of outage minutes due to the number of customers involved. In 2021, 11 of 12 applicable transmission events saw an improvement in reliability due to auto sectionalizing schemes. We added 6 new schemes in 2021 and plan to add 6 more in 2022. Last year, we highlighted one of our most worst performing circuits, Woods Creek 1809, and wanted to drill down to see what could be done to improve reliability. One possible solution was to convert portions of our overhead system to underground to avoid tree-related outages. Our plan was to use the underground costs as a base estimate to determine the most cost-effective way to improve reliability. As you can see on the map, we highlighted certain sections that we felt would improve reliability the most with an overhead to underground conversion. The total cost came out to over $20 million.
You sound mechanical.
Yeah.
Please go on.
To put the $20 million figure into scale, we have costs for other common projects that improve reliability. With the conversion of overhead to underground for a single circuit costing more than 2 substations, clearly the conversion would not be economically feasible. We feel that a combination of reclosers, tie switches, and single-phase reclosers will be a more effective method to improve reliability. We are particularly excited for new reclosers as they will allow more usage of distribution automation.
Is that something, you looked at undergrounding, is that something that utilities are now doing?
So, for us, we have about, it's almost 50-50 overhead to underground. Obviously, it's a very high cost, so I don't think a lot of.
Oh, yes, yeah, but I was thinking in instances like Woods Creek, are other utilities looking for that in a similar situation?
I think some of that federal money is for overhead to underground conversions. So I think more utilities are doing it, and I think it's probably more common in urban areas where there's very high population density. So it's more, you get more benefit for a customer there. But maybe that'll become more popular. Why are we excited for distribution automation? We believe we can leverage the benefits of auto-sectionalizing, but on our distribution system. On the screen, we have the breakdown of a typical outage and the steps involved. For any outage, there are certain steps to find the damage, prepare a crew to perform the work, isolate damage when possible, and repairing the actual damage. What I'd like to highlight in this process is that the isolation and restoration of customers in undamaged areas happens after a serviceman is dispatched and the damage is assessed, which could take 30 to 90 minutes. With distribution automation, our reclosers in the field will identify the section of line where the damage has occurred, and switching can be performed to isolate the damage, restoring customers in unaffected areas within a minute, reducing our customer outage minutes significantly.
Amen to automation.
Next slide will show how this works. This diagram shows two circuits in blue and purple being served by two different substations. The circuits are separated by a normally open green switch in the middle. The red X illustrates where a fault has occurred on the circuit. This will result in the recloser in the upper right detecting the fault and opening to stop feeding the damaged area. When this happens, all the customers beyond the green recloser will lose power, illustrated by the red highlighting. Using distribution automation, the switch could be opened very quickly after the damage has occurred, isolating the portion of the circuit with the damage to a smaller area. The customers in the undamaged area can then be restored using the switch connecting to the blue circuit. This can all happen within a minute. We are excited for a distribution automation pilot area later this year in Arlington. Our other future reliability plans have not changed from last year. I'm happy to say we have achieved all of our goals in 2021 and 2022, are now working towards our goals in 2023 and 2024. After all those numbers, are there any questions?
Pretty exciting, very exciting what you're doing.
I have a question back on slide 17. So are we switching transmission lines, or is this we're switching distribution lines when we have transmission outages?
So these are all transmission related. Okay. So we have protective equipment in kind of two far off transmission stations with stations in between. So what these look at is if there's a damaged portion of that big line, we can isolate that one smaller segment and then keep the substations on either side in power.
So it seemed that we have to have enough capacity on those lines to be able to handle those loads that weren't normally going to see. Is that something we do on purpose, sizing the equipment so that we have that capacity?
Definitely.
And of course, capacity of the substation too.
Yeah. Wow. It's a great question.
It's a lot of thinking ahead to figure out.
That's what this team does very, very well.
Yeah, and then I guess, especially in cold weather, we really have to monitor that to make sure we're not going to overload.
We're prepared for the
Yeah.
Coldest winter we've ever had.
Good. That's very impressive, thank you.
My only comment is from the customer's perspective, they want to know when they're going to get back into service, but if this can be somewhat packaged to really show the customer something that's real, I mean, that the utility is doing and making investments in, and this is what the result will be. I'm not asking for it, I'm just commenting.
Seems like we did a video a few years ago, and I've said it before, but we had a presentation at a stand with Camino Chamber of Commerce several years ago, and people just ate this up.
Yeah.
Understand how we could do it, they just thought it was amazing. So.
Well, did it go into this kind of?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, it did. Oh.
Pictures like that map, you know, these houses are on, these houses are off, and yeah, in areas, because, you know, they live in an area where there's a lot of.
I think this is something we need to get back to. We haven't done it since I've been here, but getting out into the districts and having meetings and inviting the community and having good advance notice. And I think people would, I agree with you, Commissioner Olson, would be really good to share a lot of this. People would be really, they would increase their appreciation of the community. I think it's, I mean, marketing is great, but seeing what we're doing on the ground is extremely exciting.
See where the investment is going?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's two topics with that. The one, and we are working with Julie and team on how do we best communicate the investment that we're making in our customer's system, right? And kind of bragging about our performance, but what are we continuing to do to invest in reliability of the system? The other was to your first point, our customers want to know when their lights are coming back. We have an effort going on right now that you'll get an update in a couple months on outage notification. So we have currently have the outage map, but the next step in that is for us, when we have an outage, for us to proactively send a text or an email to our customers who are affected by that outage to let them know we know there's an outage going on. We have dispatched folks to investigate the outage, provide them an estimate to restore time, and then once it's restored, and we're giving regular updates on when it's going to be restored, and then closing the loop when it is restored to say it's been restored, and if you have any other issues, you know, please give us a call. So that's in the making. That's a game changer for utilities because customers don't like outages, but they do expect them, right? What they really want to know is, are we aware of the outage, and when's it going to be restored?
Right.
So that's what we are in, you know, working on to be able to provide effectively to our customers. So it's pretty exciting.
It's, I think that's really important. But to go back to my point, I think we need to make a plan. We're going to be having a workshop or a retreat or something to talk about how to engage with our customers better. And I think that the commissioners need to be part of that, not just, you know, other people deciding how we're going to communicate. But I've experienced many times that when you're there in person, you do a presentation like these folks are doing here today, gentlemen. So. It makes a big difference in the communities. And then the word gets out. But we do have to have good preparation for those kinds of in-person meetings. And we've had COVID, but I think we can start thinking about how to get out into the districts better. So, relating to this kind of progress. So thank you very much for all your work. It's really great.
Any other questions?
Let's move on.
Yeah, fantastic job, Jack, and appreciate all your work.
Tony gets really excited about this.
Next up is Laura Lemke to give us an update on our district strategic planning process. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
As John said, I'm Laura Lemke. I am the strategy and performance planning lead for the district, and I'm going to give you an update on our strategic plan development. I hope you're all doing well, and I'm super excited to be here.
I know, I don't look super excited, do I? I've had so much coffee that I'm like jittering on the inside and I'm trying to control it. Sorry. Our intent today is to update you on our progress and share the stakeholder engagement plan for external stakeholders. We're not asking any specific action from you today, nor any approvals. We had indicated in May, optimistically, that we thought we would be back here with a draft strategic plan. That's not where we're at in the process. And I'll update you on our timeline as part of the conversation this morning as well. So I stole my own thunder. Our three topics for this morning are just a reminder and a review of the strategic framework for anybody who's joining in who hasn't seen it before, an update on our timeline and work activities, and then a briefing on the external stakeholder feedback plan. Our district planning horizon and our framework for strategy development has kind of four different pieces to it. The top line is the enduring pieces, the idea that our purpose, vision, commitments, and values are enduring for at least the foreseeable future, right? They might change over time, but we would expect them to change infrequently and with, you know, specific and deep thinking and conversation about it. Our long-term strategy, which we shared a draft of with you in May based on your input and the executive leadership team's conversations, looks out about 10 years and sets our strategic priorities and those long-term goals. The strategic plan is a five-year strategic plan, so the one that we're working on right now will be 2023 to 2027. And we'll set the objectives underneath those priorities. Those are the kind of, under our big areas of focus, our slightly narrow areas of focus, and the specific things we're trying to achieve during that time period. We'll identify performance indicators so we can track how well we're doing and report on that progress, and identify key initiatives and activities. It won't be everything and it won't be an exhaustive plan, but it will give a feel for what we intend to do underneath them. And that will over time be translated into operating plans that will be updated each year, but we'll always look out 2 years. So that we're doing 24 months of planning each time. Stop me at any point if you have questions. The next slide just goes into a little bit more exhaustive detail, the things that I said out loud just now. Where we are at in the process right now is working on the strategic plan. And then just for context, these are the prior presentations that we've and conversations that we've had with you, wanting to be transparent about that process. As I said, I'm Laura Lemke. I am not the only person working on this. There are seven other people on the core team. Kim and Sarah are both in the room with me today as well. And the team also includes Lisa Honeywell from Business Readiness and Training, Brian Booth from Rates, Economics, and Energy Risk Management, John Heave from System Planning and Protection, Kelly Stickney, he's not here. I was thinking he might be, but he's not. From our media and public relations, and Michelle Ardrey from customer service. So I'm speaking on, when I say we, this is who I'm referring to. Our work status and timeline. We are right now planning for external stakeholder outreach to get feedback on the draft strategic priorities. I will talk more about that in a moment. And then as we talked about in May, the executive leadership team and the strategy core team have continued working forward on that. We have identified 15 draft objectives with draft language to go with them to support the priorities. There's between 2 and 4 under each one of the priorities. And we are now holding workshops with district leaders and subject matter experts. Those are internal district subject matter experts, so the people most familiar with the area in which we're talking about, the work that's underway and the work that we should be considering for the future, to gather their input for each of those objectives. Through that process, we're identifying what the real 23 to 27 goals might be more concretely, and the work that's underway now and the additional work that would complement or follow it. We will then be using that workshop input combined with all of the other things that are happening at the district and in conversations to draft a 23 to 27 strategic plan this fall. We're expecting workshops. I'll just jump to my next slide. So workshops are underway now. We started in July and we expect those to wrap up in the kind of first half of September. From there, we'll draft the strategic plan and gather employee feedback on it. And then our intent is to be here with it to you in December to walk you through both the development of it and where we landed, as well and seek your feedback and review, and then seek your approval on it moving forward.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Okay, subject matter experts.
Yeah.
They're internal.
Yep.
That was one of my questions today. Who are they? And what are their backgrounds? What are the subject matters? What are the subject areas on which they're expert?
Oh, so we have our 5 strategic priorities. So for instance, under bolster reliability and resiliency of our operations, we've been having conversations around objectives about what are the most important things we need to accomplish over the next 5 years. And so under those objectives, then we're bringing in people from the work groups who would be either doing the work or aware of what work needs to be prioritized and done moving forward. So it's everybody at all, it's people from all levels of leadership at the district, as well as individual contributors, such as people from the systems planning and protection team and others.
Okay, and then I do have one other question, and that is about the stakeholders. You said you were going to talk about the stakeholders.
I am, yeah.
That comes in. I'll hold off.
Be the next section.
And just quickly.
Absolutely.
Bottom up is great. Engaging with those that do the work.
Yeah. I think the count right now is up to about 130 people across the district engaging in the conversations. The next piece I'm going to talk about is the feedback piece from the external stakeholders, that top bar. So if there are other questions on where we stand on the strategic plan development, I can take those now and then we'll move into external stakeholder feedback.
You're going to go over timeline changes later.
So essentially the biggest change here is that we had our timeline imagining that we would be here today with a final strategic plan. All of these conversations, due to the detail and the depth of them, are taking longer than we kind of hoped in our hopes and dreams version of our timeline. And so rather than being here today with a strategic plan development, the workshops were originally on our schedule for 2022 to happen kind of in the May timeframe. We've slipped those out into summer, and then this is the year of vacations, and so we're trying to schedule around all of that.
I apply to just about everything. A timeline is arbitrary.
I hold myself accountable.
What really matters is getting it right.
Yeah.
So I don't have any issues with timelines. Of course, unless we're mailing a substation that's needed or so. But you know, these are arbitrary.
Yeah.
And
yeah, to your point, the quality of the conversations that are going on right now is hugely valuable. One, the engagement, and really that's going to be the cornerstone and foundation for how we build out the strategic plan. So to your point, yeah, we want to be mindful of the time, but we absolutely want to make sure we are taking full advantage of the opportunities that we have now and making sure that's built into the strategic plan.
I'd like to hear that because I agree with that. I do want to know more about the stakeholders because you probably may recall in previous presentations I've been concerned about the not including customers more as stakeholders.
I'm going to talk, if you'll bear with me, and about two slides from now, I'll go into detail about what our stakeholder engagement plan is.
Go.
So to answer your question, Commissioner Olson, the vast majority of the timeline update is that it has slipped a bit, and we're looking towards this fall and the end of this year.
Get it done right.
Trying our best. So, we talked a bit in May after we had shared the long-term strategy about doing external stakeholder feedback and engagement, and we're bringing you that plan now. So as an overview of that plan, the intent is to share the draft long-term strategy and specifically the strategic priorities with the language that's underneath them with our external stakeholders from kind of soup to nuts stakeholders to gather their feedback on whether or not it resonates with them in terms of what they're looking for us both now and over the long term, the needs they imagine that they would have from us. We're looking for to confirm the alignment of our priorities and goals with their stakeholder needs, to surface any concerns about perceived or actual gaps. And by perceived, that could be a language issue. It might be that the language that we're using and the words we're using don't resonate and don't mean the same thing to our stakeholders that they mean to us. So that's part of what we'll be looking for is does the language resonate? And then identify additional ideas for how we could help our communities thrive. That is our purpose that we're moving forward with and have embraced is to help our communities thrive. And so we want to identify any other opportunities that we haven't already thought of to consider for moving forward. Our engagement model is to try to touch a wide variety of stakeholders and do that by interacting with them in the places where they already expect to fund us. I'll talk more about what that means in just a moment, and then offer them easy options with kind of a low, I think the phrase that people often use is like the low friction or frictionless way to do it, where it doesn't require a massive effort on their part to engage and give us their feedback. So the stakeholder groups that we're focused on include governments, public agencies and tribes, regional partners and organizations, community partners and local organizations, our key commercial and industrial customers, our small to mid-sized businesses, and our residential customers. And as an overview, what we're really planning to do on the mainly is to leverage a combination of email and I would say kind of mass communication to reach out and touch as many of them as we possibly can and give them an opportunity to share their thoughts and feedback with us. So we'll be doing email outreach to key contacts, primarily at the government and public agencies and tribes, the regional partners and organizations, and the community partners and local organizations. Outreach to small and mid-sized businesses and residential customers will be primarily through existing communication vehicles, such as the fall current that will go out. It's delivered to everybody within our service territory, all the mailing addresses. The September edition of The Wire, both the printed version and the email version, so that everybody would get it regardless of what their preferred contact method is. And then the Energizing Business Newsletter, which is the email newsletter that goes out to our small and mid-sized businesses. They'll be given a website link to go to that will have an overview of where we're at in the planning process and the strategic priorities, and a link to be able to use a feedback form through CVent to give us their thoughts and feelings. Thoughts and feelings, their feedback and thoughts, and tell us what resonates and doesn't. And then for those kind of three organizations on the upper left corner, the agencies and partners, they'll get an email which will have similar information and offer them the opportunity to give us feedback via email. Or if they'd like to have a conversation, we'll have a conversation with them through either in person or virtual meeting.
It's very robust, thank you.
So maybe again, if we do some meetings out in the districts, this might be really helpful to include that in a presentation, include this, what we're doing.
For sure.
Because, you know, a lot of people, if they don't know well in advance, and if they're not reminded, and Julie would know a lot about this, if you don't remind people several times and try to find a way to get them there, usually food is involved, then they will come, So I think that we need feedback from people, real people out there. And all of these other five categories, fine, we do need those too. But I want to enhance the role of the residential customers, if we could do that. So something to think about, since you did ask for new ideas or ideas.
I wouldn't direct anything, but when I reviewed this, outstanding work, but a communications lines consistent with our past, and how do we broaden that? Because with that, we get a very, very low percentage of customer involvement. I don't know, I kind of had the same thought that she did. I'm gonna suggest anything.
Yeah. So we did have a number of conversations with other organizations like ourselves, including utilities, NWEC, and others, about how they do that type of outreach. NWEC would be probably not a good example of residential customers, but with other utilities about how they've reached residential customers. And the vehicles that we're choosing here in terms of reaching out to them through email, printed materials that they'll receive at their home, I forgot to mention, will be in a rotating banner on the stopehud.com homepage. That type of thing. They found that gives them the greatest penetration in terms of opportunity to the most number of customers. We can definitely go back and review our notes and see if the commission would like us to, if there are other options that we would consider.
It's just a general thing. And if you've gone back, but it's really tough to capture
the customer's interest beyond keeping the lights on the grid slow. And so then we get into these kinds of things, and you know, I don't care about that. But it is extremely important. So I don't, you know, I don't know.
And I think that's a challenge with everything we do.
Well, yeah.
Not just this, but I mean, the fact that it's going to be the term, people go to every single residential company.
And small businesses, I think that they get it delivered as well.
Well, I have found that many people in our PUD customer base are more, they're not just interested. I don't quite agree that they're only interested in keeping the lights on and how much I make. They're interested in our operations, interested in how we're going to get our future energy, how we're going to power all these cars and everything electric, you know, that we have. And so that relates to, you know, that relates to the cost. It relates to how their lights stay on or not. But, you know, I guess maybe that's just the teacher part of me, that I think people, when they're informed, even somewhat, they become more interested. And if you just wait, the example I've used before is, I would probably like opera if I had gone to operas, but you know, I've never had that background, so I don't appreciate it the way I did.
And not by choice.
But you know, I'm just saying, sometimes you have to introduce people to things before you like that interest. And I don't want them to think that we don't want them to know what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you make a point. But here's the difficulty, right? We are really doing Julie and lots of different groups, creative ways to inform our customers. And hopefully through that information and that awareness of what's going on, inclusive of, hey, we're going through a strategic planning process, we're looking at, you know, all things EVs, our utility in the future, that provides opportunity for them to engage, because we can't force people to engage, but we can do, use creative ways to try to inform and then hopefully entice people to engage with us if possible.
So at the bottom of this slide on page 14, in-person conversations.
Yeah.
So I think those are extremely valuable.
Indeed, and where we're planning to offer those is through our regional partners and organization, community partners and local organizations, and kind of the larger government, or not larger, but the governments, public agencies and tribes, in that their key contact here at the utility will reach out to them and say, here's where we're at, we're interested in your feedback, you're welcome to give it to us via email if you'd like. If you'd prefer to have a conversation, we will make that happen. And then have those conversations either as part of already planned meetings or additional meetings that need to be scheduled.
Yeah, okay.
I thought maybe I got you so excited.
Standing ovation.
Yeah.
Standing ovation. Okay.
I think that, I want to belabor this because it's great work, and I think at a high level, we've said, you know, continue to look something that's reasonable and manageable, but I think where we've gotten to are two different things.
Yeah.
One is educating the public, and the other is engaging them in the future. So I see it as two completely different things. Yes, we need to do a good job of going out and capturing their interest and educating them about what we can do.
Yes. We're hoping to leverage all of the good work that's already been happening, so that people, the education about things that people should be thinking about and be aware of that we're doing, to help, you know, have educated them enough to give us feedback on the strategic priorities and the long-term strategy.
I'd be interested, if you can do it, to provide a list of which community partners and which local organizations we're reaching out to, because I'm aware of a lot of them. And like the Snohomish County Climate Alliance is one that has a lot of really dynamic people who care a lot about the environment and they care a lot about energy, and they're excited about what we're doing. And that's just one that I think of. And They're not, and mostly they're nonprofits and nonpartisan, just issue groups, yeah.
Sure, we have a list going, and I'll work with the commission clerks to.
At your convenience.
Okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
And if you have specific thoughts, we're all ears too.
Okay, thank you, Board.
I don't wish to direct.
Yeah, I.
On any of this, I think it's the robust plan, and I think we have the same challenge with all our communication. I think we're trying new things, we're having these Zoom meetings, you have on your day on electric vehicles, so. We have a lot of social media presence, that reaches a lot of groups too, so.
But other, my thought is, have you considered that as a block? You know, not to review anything and check this one and check that one. I believe Commissioner Wolf and I both expressed an interest in, maybe there are subsets of some of these partners or organizations that are nonprofit. I don't know how you do it, but I think we're trying to send the same message, except I personally don't need to check them off.
So I just want to make sure I'm tracking on what the ask is. So is the ask to see the list of people that we're planning to reach out to so that you can add any additional names that you would like to?
I don't need to see the list.
I don't need to see the list, but I want to make sure you heard the message from that perhaps the further breakdown of interested groups or, but I do not need to see a list, Commissioner.
Well, I didn't mean to be directing or giving orders. I'm just saying what I would love to see is which organizations and, like, you know, who's the chair or the president, things like that would be helpful. But as I said, at your convenience, or you're the one who would, or Melissa.
It needs to be a consensus amongst the board, so.
And at a very high level, I think we sent the message.
Yeah, and want to make sure we're going deeper.
I do not want to check things or add things and to direct the staff. My expectation is I think we've sent the message.
Yes, we heard you. We will go back through who we're planning to reach out to and confirm that we're going to the smaller local organizations as well and maximizing the number of organizations that we're touching.
And those that represent unique, not unique, but diverse points of view from what we think is the right thing to do.
So if we go back to page 13 at the bottom, it's under intended outcomes, it does say, identify additional ideas for how we could help our communities thrive. And then, right under the engagement model, offer easier, no, meet the stakeholders where they are and where they expect to find information. I think a lot of people might be like me, they don't live on the computer. I go there when I need to, but I don't hang out on the computer all day. I have other things that take my time. And so, I mean, if we set it up so that people are so reliant on the computer, I think we miss a lot of people. That's why I keep going to the in-person option, that when and where we can, and the personal, in-person conversations are great. Thank you for considering.
Yeah, thank you. We'll take that.
And look at that from a high level.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. That is actually the end of my presentation, unless there are any other questions. I had provided a copy of the long-term strategy draft for your reference. Any other questions or concerns I think we have to do?
I think we're done.
Thank you.
I appreciate the process that you've gone through.
We appreciate the feedback. We will be back to see you later this fall.
Okay.
Madam Chair, can we take a 5-minute break?
Excellent job, Mark.
All right, it is 10:19, and we will return at 10:29.
Leg stretch.
It's 10:29 a.m., and we are reconvened.
Okay.
Next up, actually, our next two will be presented by Maureen Barnes. First one is the sale of surplus property. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Myself, I'm just got back from vacation and unfortunately was exposed to COVID. So I have tested twice and I'm fine, but just to be on the safe side. So
thank you.
This is for the sale of surplus property. I'm Maureen Barnes, again, manager of real estate services, and this was previously presented to the commission on January 9th, 2018. So the purpose of the presentation is to inform all of you the intent for us to sell approximately 1/2 acre parcel of district fee owned land, which again was declared surplus by the commission in January of 2018, and allow real estate services to execute a quick claim deed for the transfer of the property. At this time, I'd like to be able to answer any of your questions in regard to impacts and or compensation. As I stated before, in January of 2018, Resolution 5836 was passed by the board, declaring approximately 13 portions of district property surplus to the current and future needs of the utility. These included some viable parcels, some snippets, and some like the one we'll talk about today, which is landlocked. So the resolution did authorize the manager to sell the properties at fair market value. But because it was so long ago, we thought that it would be important that we at least brief the board of this action. JM1 Holdings is requesting to purchase the parcel, which is in Linwood, and it has had an appraisal done by a licensed appraiser, which it came up at $55,000. Parcel consists, like I said, of approximately just a little over 1/2 acre, and access is only available from adjacent parcels. JM1 Holdings is the adjoining landowner on all sides, and they're pursuing development and would like to develop their property as well as this one. And you can see from the visual depiction, it's right along our transmission line, and all sides of it is currently owned, except for the south, but the west and north are all held also by JM Holdings. So prior to this, I also did send out notification to all of the different departments within the utility to make sure that there is no current or future use. There's never been any equipment on the site. Again, the fair market value is $55,000, and we'd like to move forward with the sale on this. Pretty much now, just any questions?
I don't have any.
I have none.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think you have the next one.
I do. So this one is to allow us to extend the current trail easement for the interurban trail through the city of Everett for another 6 months. You last saw us here in July of 2020. At that point, we asked for a 2-year extension. The purpose of the presentation is, again, inform the board of an upcoming request to extend the interurban trail easement with the city of Everett for 6 additional months. And this will allow, and we're asking that you allow us to sign and execute the trail easement extension. And we're requesting that the board approve this to move forward so that we can schedule the public hearing and vote via a resolution. PNT. In the early 20th century, electric rail systems called interurbans flourished throughout the area. The Seattle to Everett line was in operation for 29 years, and it spanned also 29 miles. Puget Power and Light Company converted the right-of-way to a power line corridor in 1939. In 1949, we purchased all of the electrical distribution system from them. In the 90s, Snohomish County and the cities of Everett, Linwood built a 12-mile pedestrian and bicycle trail, which they called the interurban. And this does hook up with the interurban that also goes through Seattle and Shoreline. In 2018, a new 25-year recreation trail easement was negotiated with the city of Lynnwood, and that is serving as our template for all the municipalities along the right-of-way. The trail, as I said, extends from Seattle to Everett, and it has agreements with the city of Edmonds, city of Mount Lake Terrace, city of Lynnwood, city of Everett, and Snohomish County. Now, the original agreement for the city of Everett expired in August of 2019. We came back and did get a one-year extension. Unfortunately, then COVID hit, and we came back and got a two-year, because at the time, the city of Everett said they cannot enter into anything that could potentially cost them any funds. So what we are requesting is, while we go on with these negotiations, of which the city has been really cooperating with us, we would like to get the 6 months extension, and then we'll continue to work with them and get it in place and back to show everybody prior to February 2023. So we're requesting you approve the 6 month extension, and I'll be back this afternoon. Both district staff and the city of Everett are in favor of the extension. And I do apologize for the speed on this one. We just got the word back last week on Monday that they would sign it, and that they felt it did not need to go to their city council, and the mayor will be signing. And any further questions?
Commissioner Holm?
I think we need to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, just a comment, it's ironic we had light rail serving Everett in 1910.
I know.
That's where light rail serving Everett again.
Yes, exactly.
29 miles, 29 years, that's interesting too.
Yeah.
It's a coincidence.
It is. I guess everything that's old is now new again.
Yeah.
Great idea then, isn't it?
No questions? Yeah. Thank you very much.
We'll work on it, and you stay well.
Thank you, yeah.
Thank you.
John, we have any last-minute items? It is now 10:36, and the board will recess into executive session to discuss legal risks of current practice or proposed action, and to review the performance of a public employee under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meetings Act. It is anticipated the executive session will last approximately 1 hour and 40 minutes with no public comments. The regular meeting will reconvene in this room at 1:30 p.m. Thank you.